night was dark and dreary, and the air was full of sleet. Well, the old man stood out in the storm, and his shoes were full of feet. Oh, it ain't gonna rain no more, no more. It ain't gonna rain no more. But how in the world can the old folks tell? Ain't it gonna rain no more?
This is Nora Rawlinson of Early Word. I'm here with Tanis Rideout, author of Above All Things, her first novel coming from Amy Einhorn Books, a Putnam imprint, on February 12th. First Flights, the Penguin debut author program, is a unique opportunity for librarians to be the first to get to know the authors of major new titles coming out this year. If you haven't already, you can join First Flights by signing up here on earlyword.com. You'll receive an advance copy of Above All Things, as well as other forthcoming debut novels. You also have an opportunity to join a live chat with each author. Welcome, Tanis.
Thanks. Hi.
Hi. Where are you joining us from?
I'm in Toronto, Ontario today.
One of my favorite cities. That's where you live?
Yes. Yeah,
and
I've been here.
What do you do there? What's your day job, as they say?
I have to say, at the moment, I'm writing full time, which is a lovely, lovely experience.
That's great. And what were you doing before?
I worked for a literacy charity here in Toronto for several years, running reading circles for pregnant and parenting teenage girls around the city.
Close to being almost like being a librarian. So Tanis, you have an unusual first name. Where does that come from?
Well, there's several backgrounds to it, as far as I can tell. It was the root they give Rosemary and Rosemary's baby, Tanis root. City where Indiana Jones found the Lost Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark. So there's an Egyptian connection to it. And I had a prof in university who told me she had a friend whose native name was Tanis.
What was your parents' story?
Well, as far as I've been told, my father apparently briefly dated a woman with the name of Tanis, and my mom just really loved the name.
Your mother's a good woman.
Yes. Yeah, I haven't pursued that conversation too far.
So this is your first novel. What made you so interested in George Mallory? And let's describe the subject of the book a bit. It's about George Mallory, who climbed Mount Everest in the 1920s. And the real essence of the book is his relationship with his wife, who is back home in Cambridge and, you know, constantly biting her nails about what's going on with him and their letters back and forth, and what their two lives are like as he is trying to climb Everest. So why were you interested in this subject?
Yeah, it ended up being a bit of a love triangle between him and Ruth of the mountain. But years ago, I worked at an outdoor equipment store when I lived in Kingston, Ontario. And one of my coworkers was obsessed with all things Everest and would bring in videos to show on this TV screen we had at the back of the store to show like gear videos and that kind of thing. And it was just, it was sort of everything that I don't understand. I hate the cold. I am not a hugely physical person. I didn't understand Everest. I didn't get it. Why
so
people?
You're not a mountaineer yourself.
No, I have to admit now I would love the idea of trying to climb something, though not Everest by any stretch of the imagination. But So I started reading in general just about, like, because it's just sort of insane, the whole concept of climbing these sort of massive mountains and how debilitating it is and how horrible it is. And I didn't get why. And then as I was reading, I came across George, and one of the videos had these great sort of sweeping white vistas with these like little tiny men in their like tweed uniforms, kind of their tweed outfits, sort of trucking across this vast landscape with their canvas packs and, you know, their massive ice axes. And
yes, quite different from the equipment you were selling
entirely,
at the time. Right?
Yeah. And it sort of gives it this whole other sort of colonial glamour and romance. And so I sort of started reading about that era. And then he was just so spectacular. He was ridiculously good looking, and was that last sort of great
British
explorer.
How do we know how ridiculously good looking?
Oh, there are these. Well, the pictures are one thing. There's gorgeous photos of him. He was just sort of very striking and angular, and but there are also these insane quotes from men that he seems to have had affairs with while he was a student at Cambridge, who just describe him in this effusive language of like looking like a Greek god and glowing and an athlete. And I had to read more about this man and who could just inspire that in men and women. And I read and I would joke with my friends that, you know, if it was possible to be in love with somebody who'd been dead for 80 some odd years, I probably was. And kind of the only way to sort of start to get that out of my head and to sort of process that was to begin writing it. And then it slowly turned into what it is now.
If you've never heard of George Mallory, you probably have heard the quote, "Why did he climb Everest?" which he was asked over and over again. And finally he said, "Because it's there." And that's known as the three most famous words in mountaineering. The story as you tell it in the book sounds like he sort of said that just because he was so frustrated with people asking him that over and over again. And yet that becomes the iconic phrase that he
uttered. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's such a great phrase, right? Well, yeah, because it's there. We use it for everything now. Well, why did you eat that massive steak? Well, because it's there, right? Like, we use it for little tiny mundane things and massive things as well. But the story sort of from the biographical sources that I read was that he may not have even said that.
Really? That would be that, even more ironic.
Yeah, that he sort of woke up the next morning in his hotel room in New York City and went to read the reviews of his talk the night before, and there was this quote, and he's like, I don't remember saying that. So it's entirely possible that, you know, some very creative and smart journalist just attributed that to him because it does sound so fantastic. But it had to be in the book. It is, you know, we do think of it as being George's words, and I think readers wanted to hear it come out of his mouth. So he does say it in the book.
Your book's already been published in Canada. It was published in the spring. You got some wonderful reviews. That must have been very, very gratifying.
Yeah, it's such a strange experience. I've sort of been wandering around for the last little while saying I suspect in another, you know, 2 years or something, I'll be able to kind of process what this summer and fall has been like. Because you sort of work on this thing quite in isolation for a long time, and then, you know, and then with an editor, and it's just kind of the two of you in this little den together, and then it goes out and you just have to sit back and see what happens. And I think I probably bawled my eyes out for the first three or four reviews for entirely good reasons, because it just, yeah, it's been, yeah, I feel incredibly fortunate across the board so far. They've been wonderful, and it's just so amazing to have that sort of bounced back, to kind of give so much of something you love and have people respond to that is amazing.
And with the book coming out here in February, now you have, it must almost feel like deja vu that you're having another
debut. I'd like to say that I feel like I've already been through it, so I'll be more relaxed about it, but it feels like a whole new field, and it's you know, and I sort of had a sense, I've been, you know, kicking around the literary world in Canada, at least on the fringes for a while, and I know what that looks like, and have seen things happen for friends and writers that I love, but the American audience seems so massive compared to what we have up here to begin with, it's a whole new level, and I'm so excited to see sort of how it plays out and what happens. It's nice to have the confidence coming out of the Canadian response for sure, and I can, you know, sort of cloak myself in that when I start to feel nervous and terrified, but I can't wait for it to come out, and hopefully people like it.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, and we're looking forward to having the live online chat with you on Friday, November 16th at 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, it ain't gonna rain no more, no more. Ain't gonna rain no more. But how in the world can your folks tell? Ain't gonna rain no more.